Peel University, which is located in England, studying under the watchful eyes of Jocko von Loon. And today I'm going to be talking about the wind speeds, dust content, and mass loss rates of evolved stars at varying metallicity. I'm going to be talking about oxygen-rich stars, evolved stars, some new measurements we got of stars in outside of our galaxy. But before I jump into that, I want to talk about our current situation. Right now, many of us, myself included, have traversed the globe to come to Vietnam, sit in a big room, and talk about wind. Now, to many people, that would sound insane, but we're here and we're doing it. So what makes wind so special? As Pierre said, wind is one of the ways that we can study and understand the life cycle of material in our universe. The Earth, the sky at night, everything we've ever known, came from somewhere, but exactly where? By studying winds, we can understand, quantify, and better understand our universe, where it came from, where it goes. Another way we can study this is by studying dust. Dust is kind of important for the formation of galaxies and stars and planets. And by studying the two in tandem, we can better understand the regeneration of the universe. Now, we've done some new maser observations, circumstellar masers, that I'm going to talk about. We're going to talk about spectral energy distribution fitting, how we can derive mass loss rates and gas to dust ratios from that. We've developed a new mass loss prescription that we're pretty excited about. And we're going to talk about what we've learned about the fundamental parameters of these evolved stars from all this work. So we've used the Parkes Radio Telescope in Parkes, Australia, as well as the Australia Telescope Compact Array in Narrabri. So look at these. The 1612 megahertz circumstellar hydroxyl maser transition. So from these masers, they probe the outer reaches of the circumstellar envelope. Because they're beamed radially outward, you get a blue-shifted and red-shifted peak. So they occur at around 100 stellar radii from the source. So we have a near and far side that are moving. So you get a blue and red-shifted peak. You can assume the source is in the center. So by measuring the distance between the center and either the blue or red peak, you get a measure of the wind speed either coming towards us or moving away. If we assume the star is spherically symmetric, which is usually a good approximation, we can get a wind speed for these sources. Now, in the past, this has been done for a number of stars in the galaxy. Yeah, that's easy. And only a couple have been found outside of our galaxy in the Large Magellanic Cloud. And only five of those are accurate wind speeds, we now know. Until now. So, since the beginning of my PhD, we've been awarded 92 hours on the Australia Telescope Compact Array. We've discovered four new circumstellar maser sources. And we've more than doubled the number of reliable wind speeds in the LMC, from a 5 to now a lucky 13. So these are our observations in the Magellanic Clouds, the LMC and SMC. And we've had tremendous success in the LMC, not so much in the SMC, but there might be some reasons why that is. Maybe we can talk about it later. So this is our new updated plot here. You can see that there's a trend with the luminosity, which is what we expect. The dotted line here is the expectation with simple dust-driven wind theory, where the expansion velocity goes as the dust-to-gas ratio to the 1/2 and luminosity to the 1/4. But we fit the LMC sample and found a much steeper relation here. We've then scaled that to the metallicity of the galactic samples and found that expansion velocity is proportional to the metallicity and luminosity to the 0.4. So now let's talk about dust. That was expansion velocities. Now I'm going to talk about dust. So we've done spectral energy distribution fitting with dusty models of the Spitzer, IRAC, and MIPS photometry. It's roughly one epoch of photometry, and that's really important because these are variable sources. They'll vary by two orders of magnitude in the K-band. So we get one epoch of photometry. We fit around 6,000 dusty models of the different effective temperatures, optical depths, inner dust temperatures, and we plot them. Then all the fits with the 95% confidence with our chi-squared fitting technique are plotted in blue here. We can use those to get a range of different parameters with the outputs. We've also plotted all the other photometry we can get our hands on in the white, but again, it's multi-epoch, so that's kind of just there for a sanity check. We've also plotted the Spitzer IRS spectrum, which you can't really see, but it's there. And this best fit, which is the dotted line here, is fit independently of the IRS spectra. And in most cases, for all of our LMC sources, the best fit model reproduces the spectrum beautifully. So we we've done this for all of our sources. And from this, our best fit model, we get the luminosity, the expected expansion velocity, assuming a gas to dust ratio around solar at 200, and a mass loss rate. Now, the expected value is calculated using dust-driven wind theory, and we actually have a measurement for the wind speed. So we have an expected theoretical value and our measured value. So by using those two, we can scale the gas to dust ratio using that same relation here. So by doing that, we can take our previous plot here and derive gas to dust ratios to get a measure of the dust content. So as is expected, the amount of dust will affect the dust-driven wind. And so you see a dependence on metallicity and gas to dust ratio. And in my supervisor's 2000 paper, he showed that the dust to gas ratio is proportional to metallicity. And so this is kind of what we expected here. So the expansion velocity depends on the amount of dust and the amount of radiation pressure with luminosity. Makes sense. As you can see, there's a pretty clear trend within the galactic samples between expansion velocity and our gas to dust ratios here. And when we look at other parameters, like mass loss rate and pulsation period against the expansion velocities, ignoring the effects of metallicity, so everything below the dotted line here, within these, you don't really see much of any correlation. So now let's talk about, so we're pretty confident that our relation here is what we're trying to isolate. So let's talk mass loss. We've plotted our mass loss rates versus luminosity here for all three of our samples. And regardless of the sample, you see a pretty clear trend. Mass loss almost proportional to luminosity here. When you look at the mass loss rate versus another parameter, pulsation period, the trend is less clear. We don't have entirely comparable samples or complete data. So this correlation here isn't as well-defined. And lastly, when you look at mass loss rate versus the gas-to-dust ratio, there doesn't seem to be any trend at all here in either the galactic or LMC samples. So these are evolved, oxygen-rich stars. And now we've developed a mass loss relation to predict the mass loss of a given source with given parameters. This has been done in the past by a number of different teams, probing different stages within this final evolutionary stage. And this is our new mass loss prescription. So we find that for a typical source of 10,000 solar luminosities, pulsation period of 500 days, and a gas to dust ratio of around 200, typical of a solar Myra variable, we find a mass loss rate of 1.2 times 10 to the minus 5 solar masses per year, which is pretty high. I mean, that's like around four solar masses per year. These stars live to be like 10 billion, so that's pretty impressive. So this is our new mass loss prescription, and we found that these relationships match known physical relationships. So when you look, when you use our new expansion velocity relation here and combine it with the relation found by my supervisor back in 2000, you get mass loss proportional to luminosity to the 0.9, which is what we have fit with our empirical data here. The pulsation period and mass loss relation isn't as defined as I told you. So we find that it's not as tight a correlation with pulsation period, and there's quite a large error there. And we'll continue to refine this. And the gas-to-dust ratio doesn't seem to have much of an effect at all with this mass loss. But we've plotted it there anyways. So what this says is that while the expansion velocity will depend on the amount of dust, the mass loss rate doesn't, which is interesting. So in conclusion, we've discovered four new sources, increased the number of reliable wind speeds. We've developed a method of deriving the gas-to-dust ratios, and hopefully we'll be doing that soon. We've had a couple of VLT projects accepted. We continue to see a strong dependence on both metallicity and luminosity on the expansion velocity, a strong correlation between luminosity and mass loss, and the gas-to-dust ratio has shown little effect on the mass loss of these sources, which suggests that the mass loss is nearly independent of metallicity, at least within our samples between a half and twice solar. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you said mass loss correlates well with luminosity, but not so well with period. And yet luminosity and period, with period luminosity relations,
yes,
are correlated. So does that mean there's not a good period luminosity relation for these stars?
The relation we have right now, the relationship between mass loss and pulsation period may be correlated with luminosity. So it might be complicating. It's hard to isolate the effects of just pulsation period in these because, yes, there is a correlation between pulsation period and luminosity.
What is the highest mass that you measured?
Mass loss?
No. So you had AGBs and RHGs.
There's a couple of red supergiants in there as well.
Yeah. And what's their mass?
Mass WHG64. I'm not sure. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure. Around maybe. I won't even take a guess. I'm not sure. Sorry.
Okay. So you can look it up.
High mass.
One more.
Just to follow up on what Tim was saying, that if you look at other stars, you'll find that the pulsation period correlates better with mass loss rate than the luminosity does. So I think it really depends on which sample of stars you're looking at.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you look at? I mean, are they Mirans or are they semi-regulars?
In our sample, we just looked at a couple of galactic OHR stars, more evolved super wind phase. I don't think there's any Mirans in there now.
Because the period luminosity relation will be better defined for the Mirans,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
So you said something about SMC at the beginning, but then you didn't really continue.
Right. So we've continued to look in the SMC. We haven't had much luck there, but we might not be able to find OH masers in that environment. You might have a couple different competing effects. So you have a lower metallicity environment. So you probably have deeper penetration of UV radiation to photodissociate the water into OH. So you have a higher abundance of OH, but you have initially a lower abundance of water. So the two competing effects might cancel out. We don't know. We're going to keep on trying to find them in the SMC, but we're not sure.
The luminosity and pulsation period of the stars in the LMC seems to be higher than the galactic ones. Do you have any comments to that? Well, to why that is?
I mean, it might be the fact that these are the highest luminosity sources because that's our selection bias here. We can only find the brightest OH masers and they're correlated with the luminosity. So it might be a selection bias, but I'm not sure. We have a much lower galactic luminosity sample than the LMC sample.
Do we have questions on this side of the room? No? Okay.
You said that you see no clear relation between gas-to-dust ratio and the mass loss, but how sure you are in your estimation of the gas-to-dust ratio? I mean, the error bar may be large, no? Or
questions?